Welcome to the Sleep as a Skill podcast. My name is Molly McLaughlin, and I own a company that optimizes sleep through technology, accountability, and behavioral change. Each week, I'll be interviewing world-class experts ranging from doctors, innovators, and thought leaders to give actionable tips and strategies that you can implement to become a more skillful sleeper. Let's jump into your dose of practical sleep training. Welcome to the Sleep as a Skill podcast. I'm very excited to release this episode to you today, in which I had the opportunity to have a conversation with Ariel, the co-founder of Muse Brain Sensing Headbands. If you're not familiar with them, they're pretty intriguing. It's a wearable piece of tech that allows us to understand meditation and mindfulness on the brain state level. So understanding different states that we are going into and oscillating in and out of while we're attempting to be mindful and meditate. And as Ariel put it, it can almost act as a guru in your pocket to kind of guide you and help gently nudge you when you've fallen back more into a bit more of an active brain state, to be able to also really gamify this area and bring some data to something that has been, you know, practiced for thousands and thousands of years. So it's really shed some new light and new awareness, but also some of the cool impacts as it relates to sleep are a couple things. One, they noted that in their user base, there were two key times when people tended to utilize the Muse headband. One, of course, in the morning with a little morning meditation, as we're often speaking about the importance of kind of bookmarking your days with morning and nighttime routines. So that's to be expected. But then also there was a large uptake in the evening hours for people utilizing the Muse to help support nighttime meditation, and with the idea of being able to support healthy sleep as well as handling wake-ups. So people would be able to put these on when they have had maybe unexpected wake-ups, and to help with that emotional regulation in the, you know, in late night, so that they can guide themselves back to sleep without getting presumably too frustrated or being able to kind of calm their mind. And of course, on that topic of emotional regulation, we went a bit deeper into understanding how much this is really a trainable skill. And with the name of Sleep as a Skill, you are probably connected to the idea that there is an approach to sleep in which there is something that we can train. And I think the same rules apply in this conversation around mindfulness. And I've had many clients that have had concerns or ideas around their aptitude for meditation, or just as if they're in a fixed state and they're not good meditators, so that's the way it is. And I think this conversation can help shift that into more of a dynamic process, that no matter where we're at, we can always take it to the next level. And this can be a bit of a cool out-of-the-box approach to, you know, the age-old advice to begin a mindfulness practice. This can add a cool new way to go about that. So a little background around Ariel. Ariel Garten is a neuroscientist, inventor, and entrepreneur whose driving purpose is to empower and help others overcome mental obstacles in order to live healthy, happy lives and reach their maximum potential. Garten is co-founder of Interaxon, the makers of Muse, the brain-sensing headband. Muse is the award-winning wearable technology that assists the trans-meditation and mindfulness. Before founding Interaxon, Ariel was not only trained as a neuroscientist and psychotherapist, but also started her own international clothing line while she worked in labs researching Parkinson's disease and hippocampal neurogenesis. Her creativity and entrepreneurial head, combined with her fascination with the brain, led her to join forces with two like-minded friends, Chris and Trevor, to start Interaxon. Together, they founded the Silicon Valley-backed startup that allowed people to control computers with their minds, the technology that sparked the creation of Muse. Her team's technology has been featured in over 1,000 media pieces, as well as was the feature showcase at the Vancouver 2010 Olympics, an installation that allowed over 7,000 people to control the lights on the CN Tower, Canadian Parliament buildings, and Niagara Falls with their brains from across the country. These days, Ariel can be found at home playing with her two-year-old or on stage across the world speaking about happiness, meditation, understanding, mental health, or telling her own innovation story, consistently giving her audiences the tools they need to help them become their best selves. Now let's jump in. Okay, Ariel, I really appreciate you taking the time to be here today.
My sincere pleasure. It's a joy to be here with you.
Oh, thank you. Yes, so it's been really great to get to know you in the lead up to this conversation. And the product that you've created has really just been revolutionary in a lot of respects as far as neurofeedback. And of course, on the topic of sleep, the ability to be able to have a bit more of an understanding and say in how our brain is functioning is crucial. So I would just love to hear more about your story of how you created this product and what that looked like for you, all the iterations to get to where you are today with this.
Sure. So, I mean, all of these products that we create, it's never just one person. So it's me and my team. I started working in the realm of brain-computer interface in 2002. I was working with Professor Steve Mann. He's one of the accredited inventors of the wearable computer. He's the guy that literally made Google Glass before Google did. And his master's student, Chris Ameny, and I began to collaborate with this early brain-computer interface system that Steve had. And we began to create concerts where people could literally make music with their mind. So we'd have 48 people sitting in a room, each with an EEG electrode on the back of their head. And by shifting their brain state, focusing or relaxing, going into alpha waves or beta waves, we could then take that brain state information and sonify it. So people were literally creating music with their minds. And then,
wow.
Yes.
That's amazing.
We're like, oh my God. We did this over and over again. We let people create sound from their brain activity. And I was also did a little bit of work at an epilepsy lab simultaneously, sonifying brainwaves. So really listening to what brainwaves would sound like when you pitch them up into audible ranges, as you really transcribed the brainwave activity to different kinds of sound. And so we're really playing with this notion of how can you hear your own mind? And from there we said, all right, well, how can we take this to the world? We're literally able to interact with the world with our brain and hear it. What can we do with it? So at first we thought the solution was going to be in thought-controlled computing. We were going to be able to use brain activity to control the stuff around us, sounds, lights, etc. And we actually did this crazy project at the Vancouver 2010 Winter Olympics where we let people directly interact with the lights on the CN Tower and the Canadian Prime Buildings with their brain from across the country. So we
crazy. Yeah. I remember reading about that one and I was like, what? That is insane. Amazing.
It was utterly insane. This was 2010. We had this completely unproven technology. We were a small team and we had to create an installation that was going to work at the Olympics where, you know, tens of thousands of people over the Olympics in any language could interact with massive icons with their brain. So luckily it worked.
Yes, exactly. Right.
But it still wasn't providing some sort of solution that was going to meaningfully move forward humanity. And, you know, we kept exploring what is it that we can do with this brain-computer interface technology. You know, we made things like thought-controlled toasters and thought-controlled slot car machines and thought-controlled lighting, but none of it was really going to move the needle for humanity in some way, because honestly, it's much easier to turn on the light with your fingers than it is with your brain.
Right.
And we finally, as we went through this, came to the aha realization that the greatest power of this technology was not allowing you to interact with the world outside yourself with your brain, but allowing you to interact with the world inside yourself. And as we were teaching people to focus and relax and giving them feedback on their brain activity while they were controlling a light or a sound, they're literally, you know, hearing the shifts in their brain state, we recognized that we could actually more powerfully use that information to teach people about their own minds. And so we went down the road of building a tool that could give people real-time feedback on their brain state in order to train their brains. And the best container for that at the time, this is now 2011, 2012, was meditation. And we ultimately ended up building the first Muse as a product that gave you real-time feedback on your brain during meditation to let you know what's going on in your mind and let you know if you're doing it right.
What a fascinating road that has been, the journey and the creativity and the innovation that you're kind of pointing to. And now in, you know, 2020, all the iterations that have, you know, kind of come to fruition. And of course, with the name of this podcast, seeing that you've now kind of entered into this space even more intentionally. Certainly it already had that effect as well previously with meditation and with now the newest version and its ability to help people specifically with sleep, I find really, really fascinating. What was the reasoning for you? Just it became a natural iteration for you to begin to bring this into the area of sleep to help people kind of calm their minds?
So the original muse that we created was a slim little band that would go across your forehead and behind your ears, and it was made out of a rigid plastic. And with muse, what we do is we give you real-time feedback on your brain during meditation. And the metaphor we use is your mind is like the weather. So when you're thinking, you're distracted, you hear it as stormy, and as you come to quiet, focused attention, it quiets the storm. And along with our muse, the basic muse exercise, we also have a range of guided content for performance, sleep, morning joy, anxiety, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And so we launched Muse initially in 2014. And as we looked at the usage pattern of people musing, meditating with Muse, we would see two distinctive spikes. One was in the morning, 7 a.m. being the most popular time in the morning. So people would start at 5 and sort of end at 10. That was the morning spike. And then one big spike at the evening. So people would be coming home and by 8 o'clock starting to meditate with Muse after dinner. And then the spike would peak at 10 and then trail off at about midnight. And what we were recognizing was that a certain portion of the population was using it to just unwind at the end of the day. But a lot of people were using their Muse to meditate in order to help them sleep.
Got that. Wow.
Yeah. And so with that aha, we recognized what we really needed to do was build a purpose-built product, something that was going to help people fall asleep more effectively using this technology. Because guided meditation is great to help you fall asleep. Real-time feedback on your brain is great to help you fall asleep. But we recognized we could actually build what we call our sleep journeys, an experience that's specifically designed to entrain you to fall asleep faster.
Wow. So this is just so revolutionary for so many people because I still have clients that will come through and they'll complain about, I just can't turn off my brain. I just cannot get it to stop. And all I want is desperately to sleep. I'm exhausted. And yet I have this sense that there's no kind of controls for me. So when I'll mention the Muse, it's really so wonderful when people get to hear more or understand that this could help support that concern. And have you had just experiences or success stories with people of using this at night and being able to really help kind of persistent or chronic sleep concerns or troubles?
Yes. So what we're hearing from our users and actually what we're seeing from the data, you know, we can look back at the data and see how long it takes somebody to fall asleep. And what we see is that they fall asleep during the sleep meditation experience that we've built, the sleep journey. And anecdotally, they tell us that they're falling asleep more readily. And I've even had situations where I am in at CES, at a crazy, crazy trade show,
yes,
doing demos on the show floor and people are falling asleep. You know, there's that point.
Amazing.
It's a 16-minute exercise, and typically in a demo, I'll stop somebody after 3 or 4 minutes. And it's that point where you see their breathing is heavy, you know, their eyes are closed, they are in stage one and moving on their way to stage two on the show floor.
What?
So,
and that
yeah.
show floor, for those that don't know, CES is wild, one of the largest tech events on the planet. And the lights are bright. And so if you're able to do that, that's wild. So I know I'm getting ahead of myself. So I'm wondering if we could even, just with your knowledge and your background and what you get to see on a regular basis with the brain and what that looks like and how it reacts as we go through transitioning from this awake state to sleep state and then the different stages while we are asleep, I was wondering if you could help educate us to understand what that kind of looks like and then this idea that we can help support that process, that transition from awake to sleep.
Sure. So I can guide you a little bit through the brainwave changes that happen between waking and sleeping.
Yeah.
So when we're in waking, we are typically in a very fast brain state, beta, often high beta, and that's sort of 20 to 40 hertz. And that brain activity while we're awake is quite cacophonous. If you put an electrode on any point on your head, you will see a different rhythm there. Because it is not synchronized. It's synchronized locally, but it's not synchronized overall. You have different parts of your brain firing, communicating with one another, processing information, and you're hearing all of that kind of noise simultaneously. As we to go into a state of rest and relaxation as we calm down before proper sleep, we see an increase in alpha wave activity. So alpha wave is a slower wave activity, 8 to 12 hertz. When you're in meditation, you also see a peak, a very clear peak of alpha activity, as well as other brainwave activity. And that alpha activity starts to serve as a bit of a transition. When you move into sleep properly into stage one, you see a distinctive drop in alpha activity. So, you know, we'll look at the brains of people as they fall asleep, and you can immediately tell when sleep onset has begun, stage one, because that clear, strong alpha from pre-sleep just drops right out. And in the first stage of sleep, what you're seeing is an increase in theta activity. So theta activity is sort of 3 to 7 hertz. And theta activity is also associated with a more of a dreamlike state. So you can get hypnagogic imagery in those earlier stages of sleep. When you move into stage two sleep, you start to see something called a K complex. And that's a big spike of like organized brainwave activity. And then you start to see sleep spindles. Sleep spindles are fast little frequency bursts that are very, very short, quick bursts, and they're about 12 to 14 hertz as well. So in a similar range as alpha, but they're in this very particular frequency, like range. And then as you transition into stage three sleep, so what we know as deep sleep, all of a sudden your brain rhythm becomes very deeply synchronized, and you're in these deep delta waves. Delta waves are under 4 hertz, you know, typically 1.5 to 4 hertz. And so in this slow wave sleep activity, what you're getting is a very organized communication between the brain. The delta waves in deep sleep start in your prefrontal cortex, so right in the front of your head, and they emanate backwards from your front of your head to the back of your head. And all of a sudden, your whole brain is kind of singing together and orchestrating or pulsing at once. It's like quite an amazing phenomenon. And then as you go into the final stage of sleep, REM sleep, your brain again looks like it's awake. So it's very cool. In REM sleep, you see all this, many of the same characteristics of the brain, quite active. You're back to your beta waves, you're back to your fast frequency. The EEGs look similar, although not the same, but your body is completely in stasis, so you can't move. And you repeat that cycle, depending on how long you sleep, 4 or 5 times throughout the night. And at the beginning of sleep, you're seeing more deep sleep activity. And towards the end of sleep, you have a greater increase in REM activity. And these two different kinds of sleep serve different functions in the brain. So that's a little bit of what your brain looks like over the night throughout the architecture of your sleep. You're cycling through 1, 2, 3 REM, and then back 1, 2, 3 REM. And then you're getting more NREM, non-REM at the beginning, more REM at the end, which is also why you want to make sure you're sleeping through the whole night so that you can get through all of your cycles and preserve both your non-REM sleep, which is valuable for your memory consolidation, and your REM sleep, which is valuable for your memory integration.
Wow, so well illustrated. And I'm wondering, you know, so for people that do complain of maybe some abnormal sleep patterns or architecture, you know, maybe an abnormal amount of REM, or, you know, not getting the type of, you know, deep sleep that they might want, do you have any insights as to the ability for meditation to help support? Well, meditation certainly as yours with neurofeedback to help support the kind of ability to restore a level of homeostasis with the sleep architecture? Are we just not there yet to understand the impact?
So there's not a lot of like good research that draws a straight line, but there's a lot of good logic that draws a straight line, and, you know, theories that make a lot of sense. So one of the big reasons that people have difficulty falling asleep is because their mind is racing. This is something that we anecdotally really understand. So guided meditations are a great way to focus your mind, take them off of the thoughts that you keep looping with, and be able to externalize your attention either onto the audio of a guided meditation or onto a specific point like your breath. And so you're taking yourself out of your looping, often ruminative thoughts, and into your body. During meditation, you're also doing guided meditations that teach you how to slow your physiological symptoms. So we talked a little bit about what the brain does as you fall asleep. Well, the body also undergoes some really predictable changes, and these changes are a cue for sleep for your body. So in stage one sleep, what you see is a beginning of the relaxation of your muscle tone. You see a slowing of your heart rate, and a slowing of dropping of your body temperature. In stage two sleep, you see an even deeper slowing of your heart rate. You see a lowering of your blood pressure, even greater drop in your body temperature, and a change in your breath pattern. So each of these shifts, like making yourself a little bit cooler, lowering your heart rate, shifting your breathing, become cues to your body to take you into that sleep orchestra, into the sleep song that it knows so well and is trying so hard to get into. So with these sleep journeys that we build, we give you guided meditations that calm your mind. We give you breathing exercises that slow your breath. We give you exercises that slow your heart rate. And then what we also do is we have a soundtrack that's actually built from your own body. It's incredibly cool.
Whoa.
So you hear, So you hear your brain activity. You hear the beating of your heart and your breath and your bodily movements. So that you also get that experience during the muse experience. You're hearing a soundtrack that's actually responsive to your body. And in the guided sleep journeys, what we do is we basically create the soundtrack that allows you to hear your body. So you're now focusing on your body and not on your thoughts. We teach you how to slow the rhythm of your heart. And then we also start to entrain that rhythm to slow it even more effectively. And so really, because we're able to listen to your body, we're able to change the experience that you're having to make it more and more sleepy, quote unquote, in a way that's really tuned to you.
Wow. Okay. That's amazing. And you're also making me think of too, with all these different journeys and the optionality here and how to use this, so many people talk about wake-ups. So when they wake up, what to do. Is that something you also suggest to be able to utilize the muse in those times when it's 3 a.m., I'm up, I don't want to be up, to help kind of calm that, mind that then starts to go into that, spiral. Is that a time that you also suggest using that? Or is that a different journey? How does that look?
So you are building skills through using muse that you then apply consistently.
Sure.
So as you meditate during the day, you're learning this activity of quieting your mind, focusing on one point, staying out of ruminative thoughts, deepening your breath. You're also reducing the cortisol levels in your body. Increased cortisol and cortisol spikes is one of the reasons that we don't sleep that well or we have restless sleep. So when you then do your meditation before you fall asleep in your sleep journey, you're again, refocusing your mind. You've trained your brain how to do this. You've reduced the level of cortisol in your body because you're relaxing your body system by system. And when you wake up in the middle of the night, if you were to do that, it's probably less likely that you're going to do that because you had less cortisol going in and a more calm mind. If you do happen to wake up, you have the skill that you have already built of saying like, oh, wandering mind, don't really need you right now, focus on the thing. And you can also just fall asleep and sleep with your muse on the whole night. So the new muse that we've built is soft and flexible and comfortable. It's really, really comfy to sleep in. People sleep in it for the whole night. You don't even realize that it's on. And so if you do happen to have an awakening and you do need an extra tool, it's literally right there on you. And I have to say, we're working on some even cooler features for waking up in the middle of the night that I can't quite talk about yet.
Ooh, cliffhanger. Okay, I like that. Got that. Now, I loved how you mentioned the word skill. And of course, given the name of sleep as a skill, I'm very passionate that most things in life, I think, can actually have a skill factor to it. And certainly, I love that you are applying that to something like meditation. I have clients that will be just have such resolve that I can't meditate. I can't do it. It just not for me. Or they'll actually talk about their anxiety going up when they attempt to meditate. Could you share any insights on, speaking to those people that just have it that it's not for them or that they can't, or that, that they'll actually experience something frightening or scary when they do sit down to engage in meditation?
So that's like literally why we built Muse. So all of those, conceptions that you have about meditation, that it's weird, it's woo-woo, that I can't do it, that I don't know what's going on in there. It's like literally why Muse exists. Muse is giving you real-time feedback on your brain during meditation. It's showing you like real neuroscience, what's going on in there, and it's showing you exactly what to do. and it's guiding you and holding your hand. It's like having a little guru sitting inside your head saying, yep, you're doing it right. Nope, come on back. Okay, come on back. And then showing you what was going on in your brain during that meditation, giving you scores, giving you feedback, and showing you how you've improved. So a lot of the reason that people don't feel like they can meditate is because you don't know what you're supposed to do. And you get really kind of irritated because, are you doing it right? What's going on? And you get frustrated and you stand up and you're like, I can't meditate. So Muse solves all of those problems by actually showing you what you're supposed to do, telling you with audio feedback when you're doing it right, keeping you in that meditation zone, reinforcing you for being there and making it very like tangible, action oriented and clear. So we hear over and over and over again from people who say, I couldn't meditate until I started using Muse. And we have literally hundreds of thousands of people that use it regularly.
Wow, incredible. So when people begin to, so like longtime Muse users, they likely, I'd imagine then begin to have this increased skill set. So what does that begin to look like? Are they able to just really have a say in the brain state that they're in with more velocity than the average person and certainly than the selves of them, you know, a week before or a year before, what have you? Are we able to kind of see the measurement and the change in that?
Yeah. So we're building the skills that meditation teaches. So people are more able to be calm in their own mind. They don't have the sensation of racing thoughts or anxious thoughts. They're more able to be measured in their emotional reactions. They're more able to be focused at work, because one of the things that meditation teaches you is how to identify your distractions and let go of them and come back to what you're doing. They say they're more able to be present and in the moment. They're more able to remember things because they're actually here and listening to them, not off in their wandering thoughts. And even before the creation of Muse S, a common thing we heard is that they're able to sleep better.
So good. A lot of my more biohacker-esque sleep as a skill people, clients that come in, they are very interested in ways to lower their heart rate and boost their HRV. Are these things that you see as a side effect with the regular use of the Muse?
So with Muse 2, we have sensors for the brain as well as the heart, the breath, and the body. So you can actually see your heart rate with your Muse activity, and we give you an exercise where you can listen to the beating of your heart like the beating of a drum. So you hear the sound of your heartbeat. And as you breathe in, your heart rate increases. As you breathe out, your heart rate decreases. And that change between your slowest point of your heart rate and the highest point of your heart rate fastest, that is your HRV. That's your heart rate variability. So one way that you increase your heart rate variability is with very even breaths with a long exhale. And as you extend that long exhale, your heart rate goes slower and slower and slower and slower. So you have a bigger delta between your high point and your low point. So yes, we see with people who've meditated with Muse an increase in their HRV. And we also give you exercises that actually teach you about what your heart rate does and allow you to explore yourself to find that greatest variability and to create the right rhythm for your heart for you.
Very interesting. And then presumably respiratory rate, we could also see improvement with during sleep if we are training ourselves how to kind of manage or modulate that throughout the day. There's an idea that then that would carry on into our sleep state, I'd imagine.
Yeah, you know, we haven't specifically looked at respiratory rate during sleep. Mm-hmm. So the current Muse experience, the thing that we've built for Muse S is a go-to-sleep journey. So we really focused initially on helping you fall asleep. We're currently validating our sleep tracking algorithms against a gold standard polysomnography system, and they're looking phenomenal. So we're going to be rolling out the tracking during sleep shortly. So right now you get guided sleep journeys, which are designed in a way to help you fall asleep faster. And then you also get to see all of your biosignals as you're falling asleep. So your heart, your breath, your physical movement. And then if you have the device, then as we create new features and release them, which we do constantly, you will continue to get all of those feature upgrades like tracking through the night, et cetera.
Wow. Incredible. So as someone that's been engaged in this area for so long, is this something that you still find that you like not need, but participate in regularly? Is this a daily practice for you? How does that look for such an experienced person with such insight into the brain?
It's totally a regular practice for me. And, you know, Muse has evolved with so many different features that I you know, I'm always finding new ways to explore with them. So initially it was focused attention meditation, and that's actually how I really learned how to meditate. I was a psychotherapist before that. I would teach people to meditate, but I would just suck at it myself and it would frustrate me. And so, you know, many, many, many years ago, it was Muse that finally got me into my practice. And now we have like hundreds of guided meditations across multiple different styles, Zen, yoga nidra, meditations for performance, for workplace, et cetera. So, and we're always coming out with new content as well as meditations for the brain, the heart, the breath, the body. And so there's so many different ways that you can play and explore. You can do meditations without any feedback and just track and see what your brain and biosignals were doing. You can use different aspects of the feedback. You can use it inside of other practices. So it's a tool that is, you know, constant.
Well, I'm so excited for these the sleep tracking possibilities, because that's been one of the challenges that so many people that have come to us that have multiple different sleep trackers and the wearables that can be insightful and helpful on different parts of the body. But so much of the current understanding seems to point to the importance of that brain activity. Could you help us understand why we can't just look to sleep stages from wearables that are on the wrist or hand to really get insight and accuracy to as much as our gold standard as we can when it's on the brain?
So the characteristics that demonstrate the change between like phase one sleep and phase two sleep are K-complexes and sleep spindles. You can't really see that from a person's heart rate or from their movement in bed. You know, we really are only getting very poor proxies when we're looking at these other signals. What we're really trying to see is, what is the brain doing? What brain, you know, what EEG state is the brain in? Are you in theta, delta? Do you have K complexes? Are you back to REM sleep? Like, all of these things are so clearly articulated by the part of the brain that's doing, the organ that's doing the sleeping, which is the brain. And so it's only through looking at the brain that you actually can get accurate and reliable polysomnography tracking sleep.
Yeah, good. I'm so glad you say that, because I have so many people that will be just really stressed out by some of the sleep trackers that they'll have. Oh no, I'm only getting, you know, 20 minutes of deep sleep. I'm only getting 45 minutes of REM. And, you know, while there can be great insight that's gleaned from some of these wearables on certain elements of sleep, the sleep stages from all the, you know, people that I've spoken with and the research that I've been a part of, it seems to not, it just doesn't seem to be there yet for, unless it's on the brain. So thank you for helping to clarify that, to help calm the nerves for people that are really hanging on some of these results each day that they're getting. So for you, your experience is that you continue to use this, and this is presumably going to be a lifelong practice for you that you'll continue. Do you continue to be surprised for yourself at your ability to further, maybe with speed or velocity, be able to shift into the type of brain state that you want to achieve at different points?
Yes. And, you know, also surprised that some days I just can't get there. Some days, you know, even I really suck at meditation, and that's okay. Our brains are different every day. And that's part of the practice, and that's part of the understanding of self and the acceptance of where you're at, and understanding of, you know, the way life pulls and pushes you. And then life circumstance changes. You know, at the beginning of COVID, I was quite anxious for 3 days while my mom was in Manhattan, and I was desperately trying to convince her to please leave New York City. And she was like, why? Everything's fine.
Yeah.
So, you know, we all experience an entire range of things regardless of how much practice we have. But it's the tools that you've built and then let you identify, observe, see what's going on, and then pull the best tool that you have from your toolkit to move you to the state you want to be in.
Mm, wow. So fascinating. So one thing that is really challenging for a number of people that are having sleep disturbances is their ability to regulate their emotions throughout the course of their days, and certainly getting stuck in a particular gear, whether that's anxiety, frustration, maybe in the case of COVID, panic states, so many different places that they might find themselves. How can fine-tuning the skill of meditation through the tools of neurofeedback support that?
So interestingly, emotional self-regulation is something you can both improve with meditation and with sleep. So there's this sort of fascinating cycle that we discovered in the creation of Muse S, where doing a meditation practice during the day allows you to enhance your emotional self-regulation, to be able to observe your emotions, to be able to calm your mind, and to be able to decrease the activity of your amygdala, which I'll talk about in a second. And then as you are able to get better sleep at night, you're improving your cognitive function, you're improving your ability to emotionally self-regulate. And so you're then in a better state to further enhance it the next day. And it's kind of like a flywheel forward. So the kind of seat of our frustrated, angry, fight or flight emotions is our amygdala, which is a little organ in the middle of our head behind our eyes. So the amygdala is constantly scanning for danger and sending your body and mind signals when it perceives something as dangerous. And typically this organ is overfiring again and again and again. It is kind of kept in check by your prefrontal cortex, part of your brain up front here. And that's the part of our brain associated with attention, with higher order processing, with decision-making, with wisdom, with planning. It's the thing that separates us from every other animal, the fact that we have this really developed prefrontal cortex. So in a meditation practice, what we are actually doing is we are teaching our amygdala to calm down and downregulate. And we're partially doing that by enhancing the activity of our prefrontal cortex and strengthening the connection between the prefrontal cortex and the amygdala. It's kind of like the prefrontal cortex is the parent who can look around and see what's going on, and the amygdala is the kid who's having a temper tantrum, and the parent can say like, hey, I see everything's actually okay, you can calm down now. So as you do a long-term meditation practice, you actually strengthen that relationship. You strengthen the prefrontal cortex's ability to regulate, to calm the amygdala. So fast forward to sleep. When you are not able to sleep sufficiently, many of us may feel or recall or know if we have a kid, you get emotionally dysregulated. You know, a kid who hasn't slept is crying at the drop of a hat and bouncing off the walls. And as adults, it might feel like we're doing a better job of being totally even keeled, but, you know, ultimately we are just those kids who haven't slept and trying to drop a hat and bouncing off the walls.
I have been there. Yes.
That's me.
Oh, yeah.
That's the effect of not sleeping.
Absolutely.
And when we look inside the brain of somebody who is unslept, what you actually see is greater amygdala reactivity. So you're actually seeing that this organ that is, you know, responsible for scanning for danger and giving us these fight or flight responses and, you know, giving us all this emotional overwhelm, when you haven't slept, you're actually seeing that that organ, the amygdala, is dysregulated. And what sleep allows you to do is to allow your prefrontal cortex to more effectively regulate your amygdala, doing the same thing as meditation in that regard. So sleep and meditation are both strengthening the connection between the prefrontal cortex and the amygdala, so you can spend more time in wisdom, cognitive control, understanding, and less time in that space of emotional reactivity. So there's this really beautiful cycle that when you're able to meditate during the day and, you know, before you go to sleep at night, you're able to kind of strengthen your prefrontal cortex and the relationship to the amygdala. As you fall asleep, you're then further enhancing your cognitive abilities because sleep really makes us smarter and sleep makes us better emotional regulated individuals. And then when you wake up, you are, you know, ready to go for the day with better emotional self-regulation and emotional intelligence and cognitive function, which makes your meditation better, which flywheels forward.
Wow. And in alignment with what you're saying about this ability, this emotional regulation, for women specifically, you know, of childbearing years in different parts of their infradian rhythm, you know, certain times of the month, they can just notice this pattern of, oh my God, I just cannot quiet my mind in the same way. My sleep is more disrupted. Do you find that for women that are dealing with this and almost feel like at a loss or at the effect of their body at different points throughout the month, that this could be a helpful process for them? Maybe they want to meditate a bit more during that phase in their cycle?
So one of the things that we've seen, and I'm somebody who notices these changes myself, and you know, as your estrogen rises and you maybe don't have as much estrogen as you'd want, as your progesterone changes, your mind changes. There's no question about it. In those 2 weeks before your period, you often have much more ruminative thoughts, you're much more emotional, you know, you are a cognitively and emotionally slightly different person than you are for the remainder for the other time. And that is a fascinating thing to experience.
Yes.
I'm so glad that I get to be a woman and experience this incredible emotional breath. You know, I can be like this and I can also be like that. Both of these people are me. And that kind of shows you the ability to, you know, you look at some people that are like, why are they so emotional? Like, what is life like to them? And as a woman, you get to taste what life is like as this kind of person. You also get to taste what life is like as this other kind of person. Meditation is something that can really help to smooth out the experience of emotional and cognitive changes throughout your own cycle. And you become better able to observe the changes that are happening and change your reactions to yourself and the world accordingly. And also to, you know, that whether that's in the domain of everyday emotional communication and how you're feeling and the moods that you're in and, you know, how quickly you snap to them or your sleep. So we anecdotally have seen lots of women using Muse in menopause and perimenopause to deal with the anxiety and that can happen then. And also meditation and using Muse is a key skill to deal with the cycles that happen every month.
Wow. So interesting. Okay. My last question for you, I could keep you here all day. I won't. So the other question I was wondering is we found, you know, a decent impact on our sleep through glucose regulation. And so I have some clients wearing continuous glucose monitors and, you know, even if you're not wearing a continuous glucose monitor, just sort of noticing different foods that you might eat before bed, you know, triggering maybe adverse effects for your sleep. Do you see certain things like that just with the clear, you know, some crazy amount of sugar that you have or alcohol then impacting, well, of course, alcohol, but certainly high, you know, glucose elements of things impacting our brain state before sleep and being able to kind of have some control over that in the face of that?
So that's not actually something that we've done research on. Yeah, that's a harder study to do. Yes. And to control for. So it's not something that we've done research on, but, you know, anecdotally, obviously, yes, we know that alcohol disrupts sleep. There's no question about that, as well as caffeine and potentially glucose as well for some individuals. And so it then becomes the question of, do you have the cognitive skills to overcome that? So even though your mind might be racing, have you built the kind of opposite cognitive skill of being able to calm it, calm your body, get into the deep breathing state, do these things? Do you have enough skill to just overcome the extra load that you've placed upon yourself?
I'm so happy again that you point to this as being a skill, because one of the things that, you know, my backstory with my sleep was that I just experienced such, as a arguably type A personality, the idea of how do I train myself to let go, to surrender? You know, how do you do that? And when you really, the bottom line is all you want is to sleep and it's just, ugh. So I love that what you've really so elegantly created is a tool in the journey of being able to train ourselves to do that. So thank you so much for making that available to the masses. And I can't wait to see what's to come. A little teaser is exciting for me. So how can people learn more about you and Muse? What are some of the best steps to take for that?
Sure. So you can find Muse at choosemuse.com. And then you can find both myself and Muse on Twitter and Instagram. I'm Arielle Garten, and Muse is at choosemuse.
So great. Well, thank you so much for being a part of this conversation. I learned a lot and I'm excited to follow more of what's to come with you and your product. Really very exciting.
Thank you. It's a total pleasure.
You've been listening to the Sleep is a Skill podcast, the number one podcast for people who want to take their sleep skills to the next level. Every Monday, I send out something that I call Molly's Monday Obsessions, containing everything that I'm obsessing over in the world of sleep. Head on over to sleepisaskill.com to sign up.